In their home, they preserved the language, the religious and happy atmosphere that was sacred to their ancestors. The soul of the child, the man of tomorrow, was molded by their examples, their lullabies, and their cherished traditions. While men were more inclined to look toward the future, women conserved the elements of the past. To all the heroic Acadian women, we owe the tribute of admiration and recognition. Along with our physical life, we derive from them the best that is in us. Our Christian faith and the family spirit has sustained the French resistance in diverse regions, which continued to multiply the old Acadian names of 1671 and 1700. Theirs was their strength, more powerful than that of all their enemies, that inclined them to pray for their tormentors. It was faith. Only a deeply rooted faith can save the human soul from despair as it experiences crucifying trials, and that has been the secret of all their survival. Theirs is a story of tragedy and heroism, hate and love, and persecution and triumph, only a splendid heritage that no riches can buy. The value of a person is not to be measured by his wealth, by his popularity, or muscular strength, but by the grandeur de son cœur. In this theater of man's life, it is reserved only for God and the angels and the lookers on. Soap making. When spring came, the family of La Scienta had a large accumulation of grease to be made into soap. To make lye, the housewife added hardwood ashes to cold water and rosin in a wooden tub. This was mixed well and allowed to stand until settled. The clear liquid was dipped with china pots and jars, not metal or granite. The fat was added and this was brought to the rolling board. While someone watched, ready to throw in a handful of snow in the mixture, threatening to boil over. When the soap had reached the right consistency, it made a ball in cold water or threaded from the wooden spoon. Salt was added and the cauldron was allowed to cool overnight. The next day the soap that had separated to the top was cut into irregular blocks for the year's supply. The bottom liquid was potash, de la potasse, and was used to wash rugs and especially dirty clothes. The tour de la foule. The 11-year-old boy had cut oats with the scythe all afternoon. His father or other men came to sharpen it every once in a while because it became dull oftener when cutting hay or other grain. He was proud because with his help, the other men could finish their own work much earlier than they had anticipated. The next day, however, he woke with a headache, accompanied by fever and ache all over, such as he had never had before. There was absolutely no position he could take to make himself comfortable. His mother had him drink infusions and was at a loss as to what to do for him. Then the wise father said, "Now I know what the matter is. Il a le tour de la foule." This happened over his exercising certain muscles, and the only remedy besides time was to go back and do some more work. Venerable old Acadian custom. La Messe Blanche were Acadian reunions in the parish church under the leadership of one of the oldest residents. They were the family prayers for the orphans of Acadia, who had neither residing priests or missionaries. At this touching ceremony, the people sang together Le Kyrie, Gloria, and Le Credo. They read the ordinary of the Mass and the Gospel. The pious reading replaced the sermon. Then while the grown-ups chatted in front of the church, a devoted woman taught the basic principle of religion to the children and had them sing a few hymns. The older parishioners also received the wedding vows, which were regularized. The priest came, baptized that newborn, assisted the dying, and traced the sign of the cross over coffins and graves. This went on in Acadia with the approval of the clergy until the 19th century. and one presiding had to sit in the nave of the faithful and dress in ordinary clothes. He did not have the right to say Dominus Vobiscum, but could say Domini Exaudi Omni Meum, and the bells rang and at the vespers. The blessing of the bread, the pain beneath. The blessing of the bread was a custom prevalent in the 1800s. It did not replace Holy Communion. On Sunday, one of the more prosperous farmers would bring to church a loaf of bread. The priest blessed it, then it was passed around to the congregation, and everyone took a pinch of it, made the sign of the cross, and ate it. Blessing of the seed. At the end of the Mass, before spring planting, the priest would bless a large bowl full of mixed seeds. Then the farmers would bring each a handful home to be sorted and according to kind. These were the first to be planted. Then the rest would be mixed with the regular seed. This practice was given up with the coming of mechanical sowers because there was always the chance that a few blessed seeds would remain in the hopper. Le Temps du Madawesco. In 1790, there were about 30 families in Madawaska. Besides the cultivation of the soil, the industries of the time were maple sugar, fur commerce, and exportation of by water of lumber, which was much in demand for the construction of the English ships. Already the colony was exporting grain, having more than it can consume. But the severe trial that nearly always came to new colonies was to bring famine. 2 years of flood and September frost destroyed nearly all the crops, so that in 1797 became known as the year of the Grand Misère, or the Misère Noire, the year of the Great Famine. After the last frost of 1796, the rest of the crop was snowed under by one of the hardest winters known. Many colonists left for Fredericton or went up to St. Lawrence for the winter. Those who stayed lived exclusively on wild meat and herbs. At the end of a particularly long period of waiting in anguish, when the men were gone and snow had fallen for 8 days without stopping, all food was gone. The last of the boiled meat, the last cow slaughtered and eaten. It was during these long days of hunger and anxiety that Marguerite d'Astibaudot, wife of Joseph Stier, accomplished her wonders of heroism and charity. She was the angel protector of the weak, the infirm, and the sick, and proved to be the saving strength of the miserable colonists. On snowshoes, with a load of clothing and provisions that she would do without or that she had collected, she went from door to door distributing a ray of hope, laying out the dead, snatching from the grave those who were sorely doomed without her help. She gave her care and lifted the morale of those who had given into their misfortune. At last, one night, the men returned with the body of the one who had died during the cold, and another dying, but also with little food, the colony survived. Tante Blanche, as she was known, when all her charitable works were revealed, became the object of general veneration. She cured the sick, chased out the spirits, found lost objects, reconciled enemies, and brought good luck by wishing it. She softened the most hardened souls, reformed blasphemers, and brought conniving cheaters to live exemplary lives in the most tender piety. Even hopelessness drunkards were more afraid of her word of than they would have been their bishop. More than one mustache was wet with tears when she was lowered in her royal grave. She was the real aunt of a great number of young families in Madawaska. Leblanc, on her mother's side, she was the granddaughter of René Leblanc, the notary of Grand Pré mentioned in Evangeline. She died in 1810 and was exposed in the church of St. Brazil, a privilege never before accorded and very few since. The René Leblanc in question had 20 children and about 50 grandchildren at the time of the deportation. Becoming ill, he was left at New York with his wife and the two youngest children. The others were all dispersed in different places. Later, he went to Philadelphia, where he found three other children. He died without anyone knowing more about him. The warp and the woof of it. In every household, the spinning wheel and the loom, perhaps, with an unfinished web of woolen cloth or flaxen crashed upon it, were in evidence. French Acadian women were known for their remarkable, beautiful needlework, which their daughters learned at an early age. Before cloth could be bought, it was homegrown and homemade. Flax, which is best adapted to medium loom and clay soils, grew very well along the valley. A whole family cooperated in pulling up the flax stalks by hand, taking care to leave the fiber as long as possible. Since there was no machinery, every laborious task in this preparation was done by the combined efforts of all able-bodied members of the family who worked for weeks on end. To the extent which machines have freed people from such combined work, the great family unity has been weakened. After the stalks had been pulled out, they were bound and set in shops for drying. Dried stalks were then deseeded, batté au flot, and the seed was winnowed in the wind and saved for sowing and for machine medicine. The deseeded straw could then be readied to dissolve the gums that bind the fibers to the woody portion of the stem. This was done either by spreading it thinly on the ground, dew redding, or immersing it in ponds, batch or sluggish stream for several days until the bark loosened sufficiently to be readily peeled off. After being dried again, the stalks were put through a brick to break up the pithy core and loosen it from the fibrous sheath. This core was completely removed by a process called écorché, here locally écorché. It was the beating of the outside covering of the plant with a wooden object until it loosened and fell from the stalk. Then the short tangled fibers were completely combed with a special comb, leaving long straight fibers called like line fibers, which were further combed and twisted into yarn in the spinning wheel and stored for weaving during the long winter months. About 10 hours of labor were required to prepare a pound of linen thread. The loom was made of pine or cedar. Girls learned to mount and warp thread on the rack and transfer it to the loom, to wind the skeins from the spindles and fill the spools and bobbins. Wool cloth for clothing was woven in herringbone or diamond design according to preference. Some housewives used cotton and wool for warp and woof, while others used all wool. The resilient cloth was the width of half a blanket, so that two widths were sewn side by side, then brushed with a wooden comb until soft as angora. The good worker could make about a yard a day if she worked from early morning till dusk. Tow, which was a short and tangled fibers, could be carded to produce standards of parallel fibers, which then spun into coarse yarn. Worn out clothes were unraveled and the wool recarded, spun and woven into rugs. The fine yarns were used for highly qualified household linens and good dresses, while the coarse yarns were crashed, twined, and heavier fabrics. For tinting, tea and coffee were popular. Also blue indigo and alder branches boiled in water to make copra. Black strands were alternated with white to make gray. A few looms still stand dusty and forgotten in attics, their worn benches pushed aside forever. Spinning wheels are mostly used as an ornament and souvenirs of yesterday. On growing old,